Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
There's a hole in Daddy's arm where all the money goes. Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose. Little pitchers have big ears. Don't stop to count the years. Sweet songs never last too long on broken radios.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we look into a very serious topic, the growing problem of heroin use in central Wisconsin. Until recently, heroin wasn't a big concern here. Law enforcement and healthcare professionals worried about methamphetamine, crack cocaine, prescription drug abuse, and marijuana and alcohol. All that changed 3 years ago, and today, heroin is responsible for a growing number of overdose deaths, lives ruined by addiction, and an uptick in crime, both violent and nonviolent, as dealers protect their turf and junkies try to get money for a fix. Like a lot of big problems, there are no easy solutions, but there is a renewed effort to fight back. Law enforcement officials, healthcare professionals, and prevention advocates have joined together in a new campaign called Pushback Against Drugs.
There's a hole in Daddy's arm where all the money goes. Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose.
Our guests today are Lieutenant Gary Schneck of the Special Investigative Unit of the Marathon County Sheriff's Department, Deb Piscotti, the Clinic Director of Wausau Health Services, and Melissa Dotter, Drug-Free Communities Program Coordinator for the Marathon County Health Department. Now, we'd like to hear from you as well. Are you alarmed by the growing epidemic of heroin use and the related crime in our communities? Do you have personal experience with the drug? Maybe you know somebody who's using it. Maybe you've used it yourself. If so, we want to hear from you. Give us a call. Our lines are wide open right now, and you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Well, let's start with law enforcement. Gary Schneck, how serious of a problem is this?
It's a huge problem. It's been a growing problem here in central Wisconsin since about 2010. We didn't realize the opiate problem that we had. Our law enforcement didn't realize the opiate problem that we had until about 2010, when they started taking like oxycodone, oxycontin, and started putting time release into that drug so that it would absorb into the system over a period of time instead of like heroin that ends up, you know, getting into the system immediately, having almost an immediate effect when it's taken. Mm-hmm. And when that time release was put on the oxycontin or oxycodones, we started seeing heroin show up in the streets here in central Wisconsin almost within a week or two.
So you can almost pinpoint the week that it became a problem back in 2010.
When the pharmacy started selling the time release, we started seeing the heroin.
And that's something that came as a surprise to me when I attended the press conference last week, and I'm sure it surprises a lot of people, but it explains why it's a problem now and it wasn't beforehand. Well, and it is quite a problem. Drug overdose deaths reported by the Marathon County Medical Examiner. We had 3 in 2010, 8 in 2011, 6 in 2012, and of those, heroin accounted for 0 of the deaths in 2010, 3 of them in 2011, and 4 of the deaths just last year. Melissa, this is a serious problem.
Absolutely. When you even look at the numbers so far, we have at least matched, if not gone past, last year's numbers for heroin-related deaths. So it is absolutely a giant concern. We've had a lot of near deaths as well. The rate of deaths due to overdose, you know, you kind of look at it evened off just a little bit between the last few years. But what is more and more evident in the community is the availability of Narcan, which reverses the overdose. So there may have been even more if that anti-overdose drug wasn't in the community.
Deb Piscotti, you see a lot of these patients at your clinic in Wausau. Tell us about it, first of all, so we've got an idea of where you work, what it does, and the sorts of people you deal with on a day-in and day-out basis.
Sure. Well, OASA Health Services, for those who aren't familiar, we're an outpatient substance abuse treatment program that, although we treat all sorts of addictions, the primary focus of our program is opiate dependence, and we are working with medication-assisted treatment. In other words, patients are not only treated with individual and group counseling, but as well they are receiving medication to manage the physical withdrawal symptoms of opiate dependence, such as methadone, Suboxone, and Subutex.
How many of these patients that you see are indigent, poor people?
A fairly significant amount, and I don't want to, and for me, I think of two or three as significant, because if somebody has to walk away from treatment or cannot receive treatment, you know, as a result, I just think that's one or two too many. But I'll be honest, what we've seen more and more over the past few years is more adolescents, more 18 to 25-year-olds coming in, average middle class or upper middle class families that are being affected. So although we have a number that do have insurance and so on, we also have a number of people that are seeking services that cannot receive them because there is no funding available. They're unemployed. They don't have insurance. They don't have Medicaid. They don't have children, so they in their home to have Medicaid. So
they're stuck. They've got this problem, and they've got no way to even get treatment.
Right.
What happens to them?
It's an unfortunate. A lot of times people will end up leaving treatment or not even being able to come. We'll refer them to other services within our community. Sometimes they have to go into inpatient detox. But I'm going to be honest, oftentimes they have a real difficult time even getting into inpatient detox. For example, somebody might go in for 2 or 3 days long enough to be detoxed and they're released. Well, that doesn't do anything to treat the addiction at all.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. I mean, it's enough to basically get the medication, you know, the drug out of their body. They leave, and they're calling their dealers again. It doesn't work.
Do you only see people who have addiction problems, or do you provide other health services as well?
Only addiction.
And I've got a statistic here. You saw 76 patients for treatment in just the last 3 months of 2012.
Those are actually brand new admits. We actually have over 300 active patients in our program. We did in a 15-month period of time, right in line with what Melissa and Gary are saying, that we grew so significantly in 15 months that we grew more in that time than they would have expected us to grow in about a 4-year period in our program. That's how we exploded.
And this isn't that big of a place. The greater Wausau area is not that big of a place.
No.
But yet we've got a big problem, Gary. The City of Wausau Emergency Medical Services reporting 5 drug overdose deaths in 2012 compared to just 1 from an overdose in 2011. 3 of those 5 overdoses in 2012 due to heroin.
That's what we've been seeing. We've been seeing it in a lot of the communities. Wausau's size, La Crosse, Eau Claire, places like Stevens Point, Appleton, Green Bay, they're experiencing a lot of the same issues that we're, dealing with in law enforcement in their communities. Also, it's an exploding problem. Even when you look at cities, say like Merrill, Tomahawk, Rylander, all those cities are also being affected, at the same rate.
So it's not just an urban problem.
It's not just an urban problem, but what we've been seeing is, that Wausau's for this area has become somewhat of a hub for drug distribution to some of those other communities in the Northwoods.
Has there been an uptick in crime, violent crime and nonviolent crime due to heroin use?
I don't know about just due to heroin use, but due to drug use, I would say, in general. I know methamphetamine's a big problem. We're talking a lot about heroin today, but methamphetamine's a big problem. We've been seeing homicides related to that, to the drug trade. We're seeing, gun store burglaries, a lot of stolen weapons. We've seized more weapons on the street, local law enforcement, not just the special investigations unit, but patrol units that are out there. We've seized more firearms, illegal firearms, felons in possession of firearms in the last couple of years than what we've seen, in my career, 30 years.
Melissa Donner, you're the Drug-Free Communities Program Coordinator for the Marathon County Health Department. Tell us about that. Tell us about some of the things you do in that role.
Sure. Before I get to that, do you mind if I just say one more thing that was tied back to what
Gary had said?
Go
ahead. It's you own the microphone here.
Wonderful. It's mine. You know, when we talk about overdose rates, you gave some data from the WASA EMS service. And one thing in talking with our local ER and trauma centers is that, those numbers, what law enforcement has as far as overdose, near overdoses, what EMS has, it's just the tip of the iceberg because they're seeing more and more patients coming in who self-administered or had somebody else administer the Narcan. Mm-hmm. So as far as the overdoses go, we don't even have an accurate picture of how many overdoses are on a daily basis.
Well, in playing off of that, you know, in speaking with many, many of my patients, it is the tip of the iceberg, truly, because, you know, for every one, I mean, we could have 10 or 20 easily overdoses that, I mean, because our patients are continually coming in and talking about that, that they have seen people overdose, and thank goodness that they've had Narcan in hand, on hand.
Well, let's talk about Narcan. Since you brought it up, a lot of people probably haven't heard about it. What is it?
Well, it is a medication that basically is putting people into immediate withdrawal. It's basically pushing the drug out of their system, and thank heavens for it that people are able to access it. But that's what it does. It actually is bringing them out of it, like you're talking about.
So if someone is overdosing and they get this Narcan administered to them, it'll pull them back from the brink of death. Or at least that's what it's supposed to do?
That's what it's supposed to do.
How do you administer it? Do you shoot it up like you'd shoot up heroin? Or
it's an injection as well. And from what EMS and some other professionals have said is that it's almost immediate. That when they get that injection, just like when you inject drugs, it goes right to your brain. It does go right to your brain and blocks all that off. And it speeds your system back up again.
So do junkies carry this around with them just in case they might have an overdose? They can bring themselves back from the brink?
Well, I'd hate to use the term junkies because when you look at heroin, it is an equal opportunity addiction. It's not, you know, some people equate junkies to whatever you've seen in the gutter in 80s PSAs. So, you know, I'd hate to use that term just because, you know, they are people too.
I mean, to me, a junkie is someone who uses junk, which is a street name for heroin.
Okay. But I guess I never called it that when I was... Maybe it's a generational thing. I'm just kidding.
Maybe it is.
I'm with you, Glenn.
I'm just kidding. I forgot the question.
Well, do people who use heroin take this Narcan with them so they can bring themselves back if they take too much?
Jeff Hardell had heard about an overdose that he had gone to.
Jeff Hardell is the police chief for WASA.
Yep. He had said that in talking to a girlfriend of someone that had overdosed, the boyfriend had been brought back with Narcan, and she made a comment that he won't shoot up unless he knows there's someone with Narcan in the room because he knows he's going to overdose. Narcan is available through the AIDS Resource Center, the local needle exchange program. They do some dosing out of it for those that request it. They have to go through a short training in order to receive it. But in reality, there's no medical training on it. We've got local EMS who have to go through specialized training, hours and hours of training, to even administer it on a bus.
All right. So what you're saying is that because of this Narcan and because so many people carry it with them and it's used so prevalent, we don't even know how many overdoses take place.
Absolutely not.
I'm actually terrified to think about the number if we didn't have that.
And is this a double-edged sword? Could people be abusing heroin intentionally because they know they've got the Narcan to bring them back and they can take so much that they can bring themselves right to the brink of death and somebody will administer it and they're okay again?
I think that does happen on occasion with some individuals. You know, I certainly couldn't say for everybody, but, you know, one story I can tell you, a young gal that we interviewed not too long ago, actually probably within the last month and a half, related to us that she had Narcan herself 3 times in 1 week. And she wanted to bring herself to the edge, bring herself to that high that she was looking for. And she knew she was going to be close to death each time that she did it. And she ended up Narcanning herself before she went over that edge.
Is that something that some heroin users do? Apparently one, where they'll try to get as high as they possibly can, bring themselves right to the brink of death?
At least one that I know of that related to us, but I'm certain there's probably a few others out there, too.
I'm sure there are. I mean, is that the norm? Well, that's really difficult to say because obviously we're not there, but I would think that, you know, I've had my share of patients that have done that, that have talked about, as they said, taking it to the edge. And the thing is that it's so dangerous, and that's why I'm so grateful that we have something like Narcan, so until somebody gets help, at least they're not dead, because there's no do-overs if you're dead.
Melissa Dotter, Drug-Free Communities Program Coordinator for the Marathon County Health Department. The question I asked you about 10 minutes ago.
That's right. Went off on a tangent. I'm the Drug-Free Communities Program Coordinator for Marathon County. I'm staffed to the AOD Partnership Council, which is a local substance abuse coalition.
That's alcohol and other drugs partnership?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And it's a coalition that's been around for about 25 years, but in the last 3 years, not coincidentally with the rise in heroin rates, but in the last 3 years, we've really seen an explosion of community involvement in the work that we do. So as far as the Drug-Free Communities Program goes, it's a federally grant-funded position, my position is, and it is a SAMHSA grant, and we're actually currently in the middle of year 9. So we have about a year and a half left of this particular grant that funds the infrastructure for the AOD partnership.
Now, all three of you and the gentleman that we were just talking about, Wausau Police Chief Jeff Hardell, along with the Marathon County Medical Examiner John Larson, Assistant District Attorney Lance Leonard, and Everest Metro Police Chief Wally Sparks were at a news conference last week called Push Back Against Drug Abuse. What's that all about?
The Push Back Against Drug Abuse campaign actually came out of a meeting that we had with our AOD partnership last August. We wanted to highlight and focus on the issue of heroin. We had a great panel, similar to what we had for a press conference, local experts that could speak to the rising concern. We had some young couple. They look like angels. They spoke as far as their addiction goes. And out of that meeting, it was evident that we needed to do something. We needed to do it now. We formed one of our short-term action teams, which we call them STATs in AOD land, and it was focusing specifically on heroin and opiates. And in that beginning, or in the creation of that, we actually pulled in a great partner, Gary Friels, who is one of the I can't remember what his title is, but he is with the Judd S. Alexander Foundation.
Okay.
He got involved in the work that we do, and the Alexander Foundation was gracious enough to put $20,000 towards creation of this program, or this campaign, excuse me.
So we've got a public awareness campaign, but this is such a big, complicated problem. How can a public awareness campaign even put a dent in it?
Well, what's nice about public awareness campaigns, the creation of a brand, that our Pushback logo is very simple yet very emotional, almost with our red hands, just like little kid touching the glass and yell at him. But the goals of the campaign, we have three of them. The first is to increase awareness on the threat to public health and safety that illegal drugs has, using heroin and opiates as our example, because that is the rising concern. You know, in the next year, we're going to see methamphetamines rise up even more. That's a very good chance. But we're using heroin as the example right now. The second goal is that funding for prevention, treatment, and enforcement is critical, because without all three, we can't impact the community in which we live. Locking them up and throwing away the key is not going to, you know, make clean them up. Like Deb said, you know, you put them in inpatient for 3 days, you put them in the same situation they're in,
right,
you're setting them up. And our last one is it's really about community engagement. You know, we're all impacted by it, whether it's our tax rates, whether it's with the crime rates going up, with the calls to service for law enforcement, EMS, you know, if it's our health care costs with the strain on the health insurance fields, work productivity. There's so many ways that it impacts each and every one of us, whether I know someone personally or not that's dealing with opiate addiction. It is impacting me, and, you know, the bottom line is what a lot of people are concerned about. And with illegal drug abuse and heroin specifically that we're talking about here today and prescription opiates, there's really no way around it. So what we're using this campaign for is that way in the door, that talking point, that way to bring the discussion up, because when we look at any policies that we could pass, for example, looking at the way prescription opiates are prescribed, for example,
mm-hmm.
we have this campaign that's a way to get the community riled up and ready to go and to push back.
Melissa Dotter, she's a drug-free communities program coordinator for the Marathon County Health Department. Also, Deb Piscotti, the clinic director of Wausau Health Services, and Lieutenant Gary Schneck of the Marathon County Sheriff's Department. I'm Glenn Moberg of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and we are talking about the growing problem of heroin use in central Wisconsin. We'd like to hear from you. Do you know somebody who's used the drug? Maybe you have experience with it yourself. Maybe you're concerned about what's happening to our community with the growing crime rate. We have wide open phone lines, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742.
I've seen the needle and the damage done, a little part of it in everyone, but every junkie's like a setting sun.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
Temperature's rising. Fever is high. Can't see no future. Can't see no sky.
We're talking about the growing problem of heroin use in central Wisconsin with Lieutenant Gary Schneck of the Marathon County Sheriff's Department, Melissa Dotter, Drug-Free Communities Program Coordinator for the Marathon County Health Department, Deb Piscotti, the Clinic Director of Wausau Health Services, and you, 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Caller, give me your name, please, and tell me where you're calling from.
My name is Saul, and I'm calling from Stevens Point. This reminds me a lot of the late 60s. I remember being in Boulder, Colorado, and some people were looking for dope. And they could find heroin a lot easier than they could find marijuana because Vietnam just opened the gateways to heroin from Asia to this country. And I'm wondering if we're looking at the same thing with Afghanistan, which is has been for years now the world's largest producer of heroin.
Saul, thanks so much for the phone call. Gary, how much of this is coming from overseas? Do we even know?
I think most of it is probably coming from overseas. A lot of it's coming up, you know, from the cartels through Mexico also. But a lot of it is coming in, you know, from Asia, from Golden Triangle, Afghanistan, like the caller stated. Anywhere that people and cartels can make millions and millions of dollars, our source city where we get it from typically in central Wisconsin here is from Chicago. And if anybody's been paying attention to the news, there's a lot of publicity about the cartels and how much of an effect they have in a city like Chicago, which is only 5 hours away from here.
And what about Milwaukee and the Twin Cities?
Typically, I talk to agents down in Milwaukee. They're getting their heroin from Chicago also. We do get some of our heroin dealers that are moving it up here from Milwaukee, but ultimately it's usually coming through Chicago.
Saul, thanks so much for the phone calls. Let's go back to the phones. Caller, please tell me what your name is and where you're calling from.
Am I on?
Yes, you are, sir.
I'm going to go by the name of John Doe. I'm just driving through your fine state and heard your radio program, and I happen to have a lot of experience. I have a heroin-addicted son and his girlfriend, and they've got two kids together. And I just wanted to share a couple of my experiences. It started like 7 years ago. He's been in and out of addiction therapy. He just recently did really well for about a year, and then he's back for about a month or so, and then now he's on a Suboxone program. And one of my dawning things was I really, you know, had to learn to deal with the side effects of him, you know, stealing and everything like that. And I started going to Al-Anon programs so I could learn to deal with, you know, the enablement and all that, because it's really a lot more difficult than a lot of people could ever imagine, especially if there's hope of recovery. And I always do have hope, but I've learned very much to not be in any way an enabler. I unfortunately had to prosecute my son for forgery because he stole my checks for like the 10th time, and I finally said, you know, you can't do this. And that was the only way to make it stop, and I truly believe it saved his life because he ended up in jail, and he had to dry out. Those are my observations, and I just wanted to share, and I'll drop off the line. I thought your readers should hear, or callers, your people that you listen to should hear. I'm a very middle-class person, and my son's not an idiot or anything like that. It just happened, and it's just a horrible thing to see, and it isn't something that, you know, unique or anything. I think a lot of people are going through it. So that's all I want to say.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us, John Doe. Deb Piscotti, this is what you've been saying all along. This is something that affects everyone. It affects so-called nice people. It affects your neighbors, affects community leaders. It can affect anyone.
Absolutely. I think that's something that Melissa was talking about before. Addiction is an equal opportunity employer. It does not discriminate in any way, shape, or form. And I really appreciate, him coming on and talking about that, because you're right. Things like, holding your loved one accountable and not enabling, you know, sometimes we, with the best of intentions, especially when we're parents, think that we may be doing something that will help our child, and without realizing it, that we may be harming them. So I applaud you for holding him accountable and prosecuting. I know that as a parent, that is an extremely tough thing to do, but it's the right thing to do, because at the end of the day, you know, this is about, you know, their lives we're talking about. And I just think that I have to commend him for that. That's awesome.
How tough is it to come off of a heroin addiction? We heard the story that the gentleman just shared with us. We also heard the John Lennon song, Cold Turkey.
Just imagine the worst stomach flu that you've ever had. And instead of getting better over a few days, it gets worse. And even after, most of the effects are gone, the vomiting, diarrhea, nausea, body aches, vomiting, hot and cold sweats, watering eyes, runny nose, even after all of that stuff, most of it has stopped, you still can have symptoms for months. Depression, body aches, insomnia, it makes it a living hell, to be honest. And that's what ends up putting people in this vicious cycle of going back to the drugs, because they can't even get out of bed to take care of themselves, let alone their children, or go to work or go to school. And so in a desperate act, they go back again, you know, to the drugs, so at least they can feel normal. Because by the time they come to our program, they're not getting high anymore. That went bye-bye a long time ago. Right now, they're just using to not be sick.
If someone is grappling with an addiction problem who's listening right now, Deb, where can they turn for help?
I'll be honest. They can call the clinic. They can call another provider. You can look it up on the internet. If you're not in the area of our, of our service area, if you look up, medication-assisted treatment or methadone treatment or Suboxone treatment, something like that, on the internet, you're going to find resources, a lot of resources available in your area. If people want to call and want help being referred, we will help them do that wherever they're at, whatever it takes to get them help. And I think that people really need to understand that there is, I really want to put it out to people. There's no shame in calling and asking for help. As you're hearing on this program, this is a very widespread problem in our community, our area, I'll be honest, our nation right now. It really is. And so to ask for help, I think, is just, it takes courage. But it'll be the best step that you ever take is to make that call.
Deb, give the phone number out for WASA Health Services for your clinic.
The number is 715-845-3637.
Again, that's 715-845-3637.
Correct.
Gary, we were talking about how this has created an uptick in crime. I'd like to play some of the comments from Chief Hardell at the news conference that all three of you were at last week, talking about what's happened just inside the city of Wausau within the last 3 years.
Wausau is similar to most other Wisconsin cities as it relates to the increase in heroin, opiates, meth, and other illegal drugs. However, the Wausau community has been severely impacted specifically by the increase of heroin over the last 2 years. On a weekly basis, officers are investigating incidents which are fueled by heroin use and abuse. Incidents like thefts, garage break-ins, domestic calls, counterfeit bills, stolen vehicles, vehicle accidents, vehicle fatalities, shots fired, prostitution, home invasions, aggravated assaults, burglaries, robberies, drug overdose calls, drug overdose deaths, and homicides. All of these incidents have been driven by the use and abuse of heroin and other illegal drugs.
Gary, that's quite a laundry list of crimes, both violent and nonviolent, everything from homicides and shots fired to break-ins and auto accidents.
Yeah, it's just something we've seen, like I mentioned earlier, firearms incidences that we've dealt with people involved with illegal firearms or, in possession of illegal firearms that officers are coming across that we've never come across in years past, not at the volume that we're seeing now. Burglaries, thefts, a lot of times people with the addictions. What we deal with a lot in the drug unit is there's some individuals, there's different kind of classes sometimes of drug dealers. There's this lower level drug dealers that are selling small amounts of the heroin that they get so that they mm-hmm. can buy more heroin to keep supporting their habit. And then there's the other type that are supplying the drug because they want to make a huge profit. And those are the guys that are bringing the stuff out of Chicago that are coming up here, and trying to drive.
Well, how much of this crime is dealers protecting their turf, and how much of it is people who have a problem trying to get money for a fix?
I think the latter, it's people trying to get money for a fix. We haven't run into the turf issues up here like we do, or like you would or law enforcement would say in Chicago or Milwaukee to that nature, where they're protecting you walk on the wrong side of the street, you're liable to get shot at by a rival gang, that type of thing. We have seen that on a smaller scale up here where people try to divide up turf, whether it was for cocaine or heroin mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. We've done a pretty good effective job in this community breaking some of that up. It's pretty much a free market up here. A lot of times I have interviewed individuals or our investigators have interviewed individuals, and we do ask them the question, why do you come to Wausau? And a lot of times the answer is because we don't get shot at up here and we can make a lot more money. So we hear that quite often.
Absolutely. Listening to different law enforcement partners talking about the differences in crime and, people breaking into other drug dealers' homes and taking the money out of there and, somebody broke in. Did they take anything? Nope. Like the overdoses, there's probably a lot more going mm-hmm. on that maybe doesn't even get reported.
So central Wisconsin, the greater Wausau area, is good for the heroin business.
It is. I think a lot of these individuals view us as a soft market, because you don't have the gang violence up here at the proportions that they do down in the cities. So they see it as a soft market, and they have individuals up here that like that glamour, that glitz that some of them try to provide them. And it just keeps driving it up here. And like I say, nobody's, for the most part, I shouldn't say nobody, because we have had drug-related deaths, that type of thing involved, but not to the extent that they do in other places.
Lieutenant Gary Schneck of the Marathon County Sheriff's Department, Melissa Dotter of the Marathon County Health Department, and Clinic Director Deb Piscotti talking about the growing problem of heroin use in central Wisconsin. Again, we'd like to hear from you. If you'd like to find out more, incidentally, the Pushback website and the Health Services phone number are both on our Route 51 Facebook page. And if you'd like to share your stories, maybe you've had an experience with heroin, you know somebody who has, maybe you're alarmed about the crime that you see happening in our community that's associated with drug use, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Gonna try for the kingdom if I can. It makes me feel like I'm a man when I put a spike into my vein. And I tell you, things aren't quite the same when I'm rushing on my run. And I feel just like Jesus' son. And I guess that I just don't know. And I guess that I just don't know.
Our forecast for north central Wisconsin: becoming mostly cloudy tonight, a low of 40 degrees. Friday, cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms at night, a high of 64, a low of 48. Saturday, mostly cloudy, a high of 68, a low of 52. Sunday, partly sunny and warm with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high of 76, a low of 58. We've got sunny skies across north central Wisconsin right now, 81 in Wisconsin Rapids, 80 in Wapaka, 68 in Land O'Lakes, 70 in Eagle River, 71 in Rhinelander, 72 in Woodruff, 73 in Antigo and Tomahawk, 75 in Merrill and Medford, 77 in Phillips, Mosinee, Marshfield, and Stevens Point, 78 in Wausau. Wherever you're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, where the subject today is the growing epidemic of heroin use in central Wisconsin. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Jen in the Madison area. Jen, you're on Route 51.
Hi. I am a pharmacy student at the University of Wisconsin, and we just had a really long topic about opioid use and the different opioids. And I'm just wondering, there's been a lot of regulations with opioids in general in pharmacies, trying to get them, you know, more heavily regulated. If they're more heavily regulated, do you think heroin use might go up? I guess that's just my question right there.
All right, Jen, thanks so much for the phone call. Who wants to take this?
My guess is no. I think that effect has already taken place with the whole thing with oxycodone and the time release. I guess it's possible because there still is a big prescription drug issue going on. And I know they talked about the regulations. I don't remember the legislative bill, that the number on it, where they were going to try to get a centralized registry, which would make it easier for law enforcement to, you know, follow mm-hmm. up on some of the pharmacy shopping and that type of thing that individuals do. I suppose if they do start doing the registrations and, you know, start regulating there, where law enforcement becomes a little more effective in Wisconsin on the diversion issues with drugs, I suppose it could possibly go up. That's always a possibility, I think.
Jen, thanks so much for the phone call. Gary, how much does it cost to get a fix to get heroin compared to what you would have to pay for meth or crack cocaine?
Typically, the street values roughly 1 gram of crack cocaine, maybe $100 on the street in the Wausau area. 1 gram of meth is pretty comparable to cocaine. Heroin is sold in the 1/10 of a gram, you know, so there, and that goes for typically around $50 to $75, whatever anybody's willing to.
1/10 of a gram?
1/10 of a gram. It's like, if you want to visualize it, it's probably about 1/16 of a teaspoon, say, of sugar, if you wanted to put that. I mean, it's a very, very small amount.
And people can get high on that?
People get very high on it. What we're seeing, and one of the problems is high purity of the heroin that we're seeing on the streets up here. There are occasions where some of these people are injecting the heroin, and they're already starting to overdose even before they get the needle out of their arm. We've had med calls, or, you know, the med units have had med calls.
Share the story with us about the drug dealer who was so proud of an overdose that he caused.
During one of our interviews, the investigators were interviewing, he had mentioned that it's good for business if somebody overdoses, because then people out on the street that are addicted, and this kind of speaks to the addiction itself, is that people want his product then, that they know it's that good, you know, since that person overdosed and actually died.
Now, heroin isn't always pure. It can be laced or cut with other substances. How dangerous can those other substances be?
Whatever junk they put in it, you know. I mean, if you compare it, the oxycodone and heroin, at least you know what you're getting with a pharmaceutical drug. You know it's going to be that, and just that, if you're taking it in the pill form generally. But when they're mixing all this other stuff, you don't know what you're getting out on the street, because there are, believe it or not, disreputable drug dealers out there that are willing to take advantage of you, and they will mix whatever they can to stretch as much as they can of the product they have to make as much money as they have, as much money as they can get off of that product.
Amazing. Either of you ladies want to add to what Gary has just said?
You did a good job.
Well, you did a great job. I mean, that's the insanity of addiction, though.
Yeah.
That is the insanity of addiction.
And when you look at any addiction, you know, she had the caller had asked about, you know, the changes in the regulations for monitoring for prescription drugs. It really comes down to access. What do you have access to? So, you know, when you have somebody that makes a comment that heroin's easier to find than pot, that's scary. Not Gary, that's scary. that's scary business. And when you look at the progression, you know, if you've got prescription medications in your home, we encourage you, if you are not taking them on a daily basis, take them to one of our 5 permanent drop box locations at our local police departments. We'd be happy to take them off your hand. Because if you get hurt again, odds are you're going to get another prescription. And there's no reason to keep them around the home for somebody to take. Because I always tell the story, I was at a birthday party for a 2-year-old. Everybody knew everybody. Everybody, you know, very friendly. You know, there's no strangers in the crowd. And somebody went to the back of the medicine cabinet with the doors were shut, found the bottle of Vicodin, took half the bottle, put the bottle back. And this is family and friends. You never know who it is that's going to abuse these medications.
And that's a very common problem that we find, that a lot of family members involved with the whole medication thing. A lot of times we have individuals, cleaning people, whoever, that have some type of a pill addiction, that type of thing, taking pills from individuals when they're in their homes or family members, whatever. It was kind of a silent problem before, but then, like I said, when this whole thing came about with OxyContin, then it really became an issue, because it's something you can't ignore, but it's something where our eyes were really opened up as to what the opiate problem was when they started regulating the opiates.
Gary, we understand you've got another appointment, so you're going to have to leave us a little bit early here. Lieutenant Gary Schneck, thanks so much for being with us on Route 51 today.
You're welcome.
Melissa Dotter and Deb Piscotti will be with us after this next break, and we still got time to hear from you. Do you know someone who has taken heroin? Have you had experience with it yourself? Are you concerned about what's happening in our community right now? Do you have questions about what to look for if you suspect maybe your kids are using? 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Concrete concentration camp. Bashing in veins for peace. Hold the strings we fall. Fall to Lady Release. Come with me. I know the way. She says it's down, down, down a dark ladder.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. The subject today is heroin use and the growing problem of heroin use in central Wisconsin. We do have lines open right now if you'd like to give us a call, if you'd like to weigh in on this issue, 1-800-780-9742. Thanks to Lieutenant Gary Schneck for being with us for most of this program. We are back with Melissa Dotter of the Marathon County Health Department and Clinic Director Deb Piscotti. Deb, there are other problems, other health-related problems associated with heroin use, and one of them is an alarming increase in hepatitis infections because of sharing needles. And I imagine along with that would go HIV infections and presumably people coming down with AIDS.
That's correct. And in fact, for the northern region in our area, that is something that has really, really become a pretty significant problem. In fact, we actually partner with AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin, and they come in on a monthly basis now and are providing free HIV and Hep C testing for our patients, just so that we can, you know, hopefully find them treatment if they are positive.
How much of that do you see in your clinic?
Well, you know, I don't get a lot of the information, but I do know basically on a regular basis we're getting positives, and that is in stark contrast to when I started doing this with AIDS Resource Center 10 years ago. Never saw positives, or very rarely. But then again, when we first opened our doors, we saw mostly OxyContin use, other narcotic painkillers, mm-hmm. And it was, the route was snorting. It wasn't IV heroin use. And so we have a lot of sharing of needles and, of course, those health risks that are associated.
And there's a misperception that just by getting a clean needle that you're safe. And when they've done some follow-up interviews, when the State Department of Health Services actually did a study on central Wisconsin because of our alarming increases in Hep C cases and HIV, new HIV cases amongst young adults, from 18 to 35, I think, is where they broke the range down. I know Deb in discussions has seen that too, but there's this misperception that if you take a clean needle every time, you're going to be safe. But what's happening is they're sharing their works, the things that they cook the or dilute the heroin in, the cotton balls they suck the heroin through into the syringe. So they're sharing all the materials to ingest the heroin. Even though they're using a clean needle, they're contaminating that needle.
What should parents look for if they suspect that their kids may be using?
You know, differences in who they're hanging with, grades going down if it's adolescence, maybe isolation, irritability, changes in mood.
Lying.
Lying.
A lot of lying. Looking for, you know, all of a sudden things start disappearing around the house, or, oh, I lost my iPad, or, oh, you know, I need money for this. And, you know, just kind of that there's some deceptiveness that goes along with addiction. And also, you know, for things like heroin, if they're injecting it, you know, looking for track marks, looking for scarring on their arms. But the changes in behavior, I think, is one of the biggest things that you're going to see.
Cotton balls, burnt spoons.
The paraphernalia left behind, absolutely. Torn up, a lot of the times heroin is packaged in baggies where they just tear the corner off and twist it. So if you're seeing bags with no corners or you're seeing just corners of bags, that's another indication.
What do you do if you suspect that there's a dealer living in your neighborhood? What do you look for, first of all?
Well, that's part of that pushback campaign, is that we really want to engage the public in. If you're seeing cars going in and out or going and parking at a house and people are just running in and coming back out all hours of the day, if you're seeing suspicious activity where they may have the windows blocked, you know, just kind of, I don't want to say criminal-looking characters hanging around, but, you know, when someone's giving you the ick and making you uneasy, there's probably a very good chance with that. Trust your intuition. Law enforcement wants to hear these calls. They want to get that information. We encourage people to use the Crime Stoppers number and report any suspicious activity, because law enforcement can't do anything if they don't have a case. And when they have those tips, don't get discouraged if you don't see the cops mm-hmm. swarming down on this place. They need to build that case. They need to get those warrants. They need to have the proof that they need, because one thing that when you talk with law enforcement or prosecutors or anybody that's looking at and working through these cases is that there's plenty of people on the lowest ring that are dealing that are just the ones that are just handing it off to the person that's going to use. There's always going to be somebody that steps up. They're trying to figure out who's bringing it into the community, because those that are on the lower ring are probably the ones that are using, they're doing it to support their habit. You go the next step up and the next step up above that. Those people got kind of, they're kind of pretty smart not to use their own product. So they're trying to get the people that are bringing it into our community.
Got it. So. What's next for the Pushback Against Drug Abuse campaign? We're almost out of time.
Oh, sorry, talkative. Well, for those that missed the Pushback press conference last week, we did post it online at www.pushbackdrugs.com. It's also on the healthymarathoncounty.org website. You can view it online through YouTube as well. So check that out. And then on June 4th, it's a Tuesday, from 11:30 to 1, we're going to continue the conversation that we started at the press conference, talk about the scope of the issue briefly, just doing some highlights from the press conference, talk about the Pushback Against Drug Abuse campaign, ways people can get involved in their homes, in their communities, in their neighborhoods, organizations, foundations. And then finally, we're going to invite the families that have been impacted locally. The Dixons recently lost their son on the accident on the bridge on Thomas Street. A lot of people saw that case. A lot of people's heart breaks for that family every day and give hope for the four-year-old's recovery that was also involved in the accident. They're going to be part of that forum. We're also going to be reaching out to some others that are going through addiction and recovery.
And Deb Piscotti, give out the phone number of your clinic one more time, please.
Sure, 715-845-3637. But again, they can also call 211 and look for providers as well.
All right. We want to thank today's guest, Lieutenant Gary Schneck of the Special Investigative Unit of the Marathon County Sheriff's Department, Deb Piscotti, the Clinic Director of Wausau Health Services, and Melissa Donner, Drug-Free Communities Program Coordinator for the Marathon County Health Department. If you'd like more information on the Pushback Against Drug Abuse campaign, visit www.pushbackagainstdrugs.com. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Special music today by John Prine, Neil Young, John Lennon, Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground, Joni Mitchell, and Paul Revere and the Raiders. Next week on Route 51, it's fun at the old ballpark as we look at the Northwoods League and we welcome Mark McDonald, president of the Wisconsin Woodchucks, who play at soon-to-be-renovated Athletic Park in Wausau, and Liz Kern, general manager of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, who play at beautiful Witter Field. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town. You'll never run away from here.